This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. I'm Jim Gutis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're still watching a little snow and icy rain. A weather advisory goes until 3 p.m., and the snow will mix with sleet and freezing rain, coating to an inch. Right now, we've got 33 degrees. The wind chill makes it feel like 29.
It's been an up-and-down day on Wall Street. Let's see where it is now as we check in live at Bloomberg with Elisa Peretti.
That's right, Jim. A little bit of both. Although we haven't seen any big moves in either direction, the Dow up 4 points, NASDAQ lower by 15 or 0.2%, S&P down a fraction of a point, and the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is higher by almost 1%. Crude oil futures gaining 2% to $57 a barrel. In just about an hour, the Fed will issue minutes of its January policy meeting. The report could give us a better understanding of the Fed's surprise decision to postpone further rate hikes. The Fed tightened four times in 2018. Also, we got a reading on mortgage applications, and they rose for the first time in 5 weeks. We've seen the Federal Reserve decide to stop tightening, and so that's also impacting mortgage applications, and they're on the rise. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, just as you were saying, the markets are right now finding out why the Fed took a U-turn on a policy in its last statement. We're going to hear from them around 1 o'clock. And we also are talking about the winter weather advisory and how that is affecting companies and people.
We'll take a look at a couple of companies, CVS Health and Southwest Airlines, on Personal Finance Wednesday. We'll look at divorce and money. Those two subjects almost always go together. We'll also look at the higher minimum wage coming to Illinois, its effect on business, and telecommuting, a great topic on a day like this. All that ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There are ways to make sure to get your tax refund as quickly as possible. We're going to be covering that in our next segment. But right now, the Fed will release the minutes of the last meeting in less than an hour. And with the high-level talks on trade between the U.S. and China continue in Washington, we're talking about that as well. And we're joined by Jim Key, President and Chief Economist at South Texas Money Management in San Antonio. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Jim. What are you expecting to hear from the Fed?
Well, I think the Fed is probably going to show a little more sensitivity to the slowing global data that it seemed to kind of ignore towards the end of last year. And I think that was one of the big reasons for the sell-off in the fourth quarter. The Fed seemed kind of bent on maintaining its regime of rate hikes, and the global data was slowing, and it seemed to be really ignoring it. And in fact, when the Fed changed its stance, you know, most recently, the markets kind of rebounded. But really, you pointed to the two big headwinds last year, and that was China trade talks and Fed policy. And I think those could turn to the two big tailwinds for 2019.
So as an investor and president and chief economist of a money management firm, what do you want the Fed to say? What would you like to hear?
Well, yeah, first of all, I wouldn't tailor an investment strategy based on, you know, trying to figure out what Jerome Powell's going to wake up and decide. But we do think that the Fed will continue to pause. That's what the futures markets expect. And I think it should. I think there's a lot of research coming out of the Fed now saying that a normal or neutral rate is closer to where it is now rather than the 3% target it discussed at the beginning of last year. So I would expect, you know, the futures markets are expecting basically no change this year. And there's about as many strategists expecting a rate cut at this point as a rate hike. But I think, you know, our best bet is probably flat from here.
Jim, you talked about tailwinds. What are some of the headwinds that we might encounter as we move forward and the Fed decides whether it's raising rates, lowering rates, keeping them steady?
Well, I don't think the Fed is going to see anything in the growth or inflation data to really make it raise rates, you know, continually this year like it did last. So I don't think that'll be a headwind at all. And in fact, I think markets have already rebounded pretty strongly this year based on the Fed sentiments to that point. I think the China, you had growing trade tensions last year, and I think that should turn more towards conciliation this year, but that is one thing that would be the big wild card. Just like last year, you know, any big blow up in agreement, trade agreements between Trump and China, and really including Europe, that could, you know, that would throw all forecasts out, and you'd get a return to the volatility that we had last year.
And in fact, in China right now, the Chinese Communist Party run newspaper Global Times says in an editorial that if the U.S. imposes more tariffs on Chinese products while China responds with fiercer countermeasures, it would be a catastrophic strike to global stock markets.
Yeah, you know, wealth is created by production and exchange is the most fundamental. So anytime you threaten exchange, you threaten wealth creation, and that's why stocks sell off. So I think that might be more just, you know, press blustering than the truth. And the truth is, behind the scenes, both China and Trump have strong incentives to get some sort of a deal done to move more towards conciliation than antagonism like they did last year. And that's what I expect to happen.
So again,
that seems to be what markets have priced thus far.
So again, Jim Key, what's your key to look for as the Fed minutes come out today?
Well, I am looking for the Fed to just show a little. I don't expect them to really say much on inflation, which hasn't been an issue in 10 years. I really expect them to show some cognizance of the slowdown in global growth. I mean, we've got, you know, Germany, Europe's biggest economy, kind of flirting with recession, in and out of barely positive growth. Same with Japan, and China's slowing. So just some sense that they're cognizant of that is what I'm looking for.
Jim, thanks so much for joining us today. Jim Key is president and chief economist at South Texas Money Management in San Antonio. And coming up, ways to jumpstart your tax return.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Tax filing season is in full swing, underway, and there are ways to make sure that the process goes smoothly, especially if you expect a refund. Let's get some help with Laura Davidson, who is tax reporter at Bloomberg in Washington. Thanks for joining us today, Laura. What's the first step?
Well, the first step is to make sure you have all your paperwork, get everything ready to go, and then take a big, deep breath, because this year is different than all other years that have come prior. This is the first year that we're filing under the 2017 tax overhaul. So for a lot of people, there's a couple things that you might notice that are different. One, if you used to itemize, meaning you added up all your deductions from your mortgage, from your charitable contributions, from your state and local taxes, what the law did is it doubled the standard deduction. So now about 90-95% of people will take the standard deduction, meaning it's less paperwork, it's a little bit easier. You get $24,000 for a couple, $12,000 about for an individual. And it's it should be, hopefully, the idea is a simpler process. The other thing, too, that's different is the withholding tables changed. So this means how much was taken out or not of your paycheck throughout the year is different than it was last year. So your refund size might be different. And a lot of people are finding that their refund is a lot smaller, or in some cases that they actually owe money, that they're not getting a refund and they owe the IRS because they already saw sort of the tax cut doled out in little chunks throughout the year. So two things, perhaps a different way of filing, and also could be some surprises on the refund front.
Is there anything you can do, Laura, in that respect, if you were under withheld, where you can mitigate the potential of a penalty for under withholding?
IRS has already come out and said that they are doing away with some of the penalties if you were under withheld. So the first thing you want to do is see if you fall there. There have also been some requests from members of Congress for the IRS to be even more lenient there. So if you, you know, be sure to call your Congress member to discuss that if that's something you find yourself in. The other thing, too, is to check your withholding now so you don't end up in this situation next year. You can go on IRS.gov, has a calculator, and you can put in your information. It'll tell you, you know, how much, based on what you're withholding right now, your refund or your liability will be next spring. And then you can go to your employer and have those numbers changed if you're not happy with the result.
Now, Laura, in some cases, I understand that some employers didn't quite do withholding correctly, just as we're sort of a little bit confused being the first year of this withholding. Some employers were, too. So how do you make sure that your employer is, in fact, withholding as much as you want them to?
So you can go in and you can adjust those numbers on your form with them at any point throughout the year. So that's kind of on your prerogative. You can go in as an employee as many times as you want to change it. Maybe you want to have, you know, a lot of withholding at the beginning of the year, but not at the end. Or let's say you get married or have a baby. Anything that would sort of change your tax status, you can go in and have it changed at that point there.
Let's say that you don't really have a real keen vision on how to do this. You need someone to help you, so you're going to hire someone. How much does that typically run?
You know, that really totally varies, you know, whether you're going to, you know, an accountant or a tax lawyer or, you know, like what's called an enrolled agent. These are tax preparers that are licensed, but don't necessarily have a degree in it, or there's also sort of unlicensed tax preparers, sort of tax assistants, but then they have someone who's an accountant or a licensed preparer go and review their work. So it can really vary, you know, from using a software service that's guided with a CPA or someone who's helping you digitally, you know, virtually through the software versus going in down and sitting. You know, you could be talking, you know, $50 to $100 upwards to, you know, several thousand dollars, depending on both your tax situation and the kind of help you're seeking.
Laura Davison, tax reporter with Bloomberg out of Washington. Thank you so much for some great advice. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, dealing with divorce and money.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the numbers. Sponsored by Baird, here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we remain narrowly mixed with the Dow up 20 points or less than a tenth of a percent, NASDAQ down 6 points, and the S&P adding 2. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by 1%. Big rally for crude oil futures. It rolls on with futures gaining almost 2% on the day and moving back above $57 a barrel. Crude is up almost 25% since January 1. Now let's check in with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets have moved higher over the noon hour after seeing some early selling pressure. Wheat was the weak link due to a slowdown in export demand, with Egypt bypassing the U.S. on their wheat tender. Corn has found support from comments that China could possibly buy U.S. corn. Corn futures are 2 to 2.25 cents higher, soybeans 3 to 3.25 higher, and the wheat market 5 to 6 cents lower. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Kurt. With business at 25 and 55 and live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome to the second half of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. I'm Jim Gutis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stock sluggish today. We'll see what's dragging on the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, avoiding mistakes that can cost you money in a divorce.
From the workplace today, there's reaction to Illinois' new minimum wage law, plus more people are doing their jobs from home.
Chicago area and several other parts of the U.S. are dealing with travel disruptions because of winter storms.
The WBBM Market Watch, the Dow now up 40 points, the S&P 500 up 4, but the NASDAQ's down 1.5.
And we've got some snow in the area and some ice right now. It's 33 degrees.
WBBM News Time, 12:31. Markets mixed at this hour, and we're joined by Jack Ablin, the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors in Chicago. So, Jack, is everyone pretty much just waiting for the Fed minutes?
Yeah, I think so, Jim. Excuse me. Yeah, I think you know, we want to see what the thinking was inside that boardroom behind the shift that the Federal Reserve has had against, you know, raising rates so aggressively to perhaps taking more of a wait-and-see attitude. So I think aren't going to be too many big surprises, but I think there may be a revelation in there, and I think that's what investors are looking for.
Well, it's a little tough to say what that revelation might be. What are some of the things that could come out of these minutes that could really move the markets?
Well, perhaps, you know, a downgrade of economic activity, you know, something like that, or maybe a diminishment of inflation expectations, perhaps even something about, you know, pushing off any future rate hikes indefinitely, you know, maybe something along that line where it may not just have been a one-off comment, but something that the entire Federal Open Market Committee has rallied behind.
What would you like to hear from the Fed, Jack?
I think that, you know, they've really done exactly what they should do, and that is obviously play it by ear. I know Chairman Powell did try to distance himself from the stock market back in December, and that didn't play well. Investors are accustomed to having the Federal Reserve come to their rescue if equities get upset. And the Fed is trying to back away from that babysitter role, but I don't think they can too cleanly. So my sense is, if there's any word about watching, you know, equity markets, that's something that would comfort investors.
And how would you like to see the economy moving at this point? We've got, you know, disputes sometimes with the president, but also, you know, the politics is going to be there.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm comfortable if the economy is growing at its potential growth rate, which is sort of the capacity at which it can grow without running out of capacity, so to speak, and, you know, sparking some inflation. And unfortunately, Chris, that growth rate's about 2 to 2.5%. If you look back at the average growth rate since the recovery of from the financial crisis, we've grown at around 2 to 2.5%. Last year, in fact, 2018 was an aberration when you take aggressive monetary policy and couple it with a massive tax package. You know, we got 4.2% growth in the second quarter, 3.5% growth in the third quarter. And now we're, you know, as we look into 2019, I think we're moving back to that 2 to 2.5% range. And so from the perspective of 4.2 or 3.5, 2.2 looks like, you know, maybe not quite a recession, but certainly a disappointment. But to me, I'm much more comfortable with that because we can grow a potential for, you know, indefinitely. We don't necessarily need a recession as long as we're growing within our speed limit.
If investors asked you this afternoon, you know, where do you have some ideas where I might look right now, you know, where something looks fruitful, what would you say?
Sure. So if I just look at the world equity markets through the lens of valuation, the emerging markets, those related to China mostly, look the cheapest. And if we can continue to just get modest growth and not really upset the apple cart in terms of you know, massive trade problem, the emerging markets should do well. So that would be my number one recommendation. As a hedge, I would say perhaps U.S. small caps. If, you know, if the world economy does slip, U.S. small caps are most exposed to just the domestic economy. They should do better than large caps. And also a nice hedge if the trade dispute really, you know, flares up. You know, keep in mind, we're talking to China now, but we are in ongoing negotiations with Europe. It's entirely possible we could see tariffs in that part of the world as well. So still a lot of issues to resolve. And I think a combination of emerging markets on the upside and kind of U.S. small caps to kind of, you know, insure against global downside is probably the way to go.
Jack Ablin, the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors in Chicago. Jack, always great to get your perspective, especially on a day when we're going to get a peek into what the Fed has been thinking about. Up next on Personal Finance Wednesday, making good money decisions during a divorce.
a wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, the focus is on money and divorce. And we welcome Liz Weston, columnist for NerdWallet, author of the books Your Credit Score and the fifth edition, Deal With Your Debt, in Los Angeles. And Liz, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. It's kind of hard to separate money and divorce, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know that money is the leading cause of divorce, but it certainly makes it, you know, much more likely if you're constantly fighting about money. And then you get into the divorce and it complicates your financial situation just exponentially.
It's got to be a terrible emotional process. But what would you suggest to people the best way to get through it?
Well, one of the first things that a divorce attorney told me, and I hadn't even thought of this, is get off social media or be very careful about what you share. And what she did was she related an incident where one of her clients had a husband who just kept saying, you know, he couldn't afford what they were suggesting. And then he went on social media and bragged about a great vacation he just took and a big deal he just closed. And the attorney basically said, thank you. You know, gave him all the ammunition that she needed to get the settlement. So, and you don't, you know, if you're bragging about your great new life or your great new boyfriend or whatever, you know, you're risking really pissing the other person off. And it's just unnecessary and makes things much more difficult. Something else to keep in mind is most divorces are settled. Even if you wind up in court trying to get the judge to, you know figure out certain things, eventually you typically will settle. So the sooner that you can wrap your head around that and realize it will be much less expensive for you to keep that in mind and try to stay out of court, you can save both parties a lot of money.
Liz, I also imagine, too, that even if you aren't sure whether you're going to get a divorce, it's a good idea to take a look at your finances, look at your financial situation, and prepare yourself in case it happens. It's better to go in prepared than react to what your financial situation might be if you do find yourself in a divorce.
Yeah, and one of the key things is to get all the paperwork. That is helpful not just for planning the divorce, but afterwards, because, you know, you may need some papers down the road. And if you're already divorced, you know, your ex doesn't have a lot of motivation to get those for you. In advance of a divorce, it can help you understand your financial situation, you know, what your debts are, what your assets are, so you can kind of craft a more realistic settlement. After the divorce, it can really help you, you know, do things like figure out if you should claim Social Security benefits on your own record or on your ex's earnings records. You can figure out, you know, tax implications of selling the house. There's a ton of stuff that having the paperwork makes a lot easier. So gathering that in advance is really important.
And Liz, how important is it to make sure that some things are in your name or you're part of that in terms of who owns these accounts, and getting things that you don't necessarily want to have your name on should you end up in a divorce situation?
Yeah, you know, it depends on if your state is community property or not. In general, if you have an inheritance, if you have property that you bring into the marriage, keeping that in your own name is just prudent in most cases. So, you know, if you get an inheritance, don't dump it into the joint account. Keep that separate. If you have property, don't use joint funds to maintain it or, you know, take care of it. You want to keep that separate. So it's, you know, even if you expect a long and happy marriage and hope you do, it, most of the time, if you have separate property, it's really smart to keep that separate.
Liz, do we see that during recessions, there aren't as many divorces?
Yeah, people hunker down. And the other thing that can actually trigger divorces is changes in tax law. And we just had a huge one that changed the nature of alimony. It used to be that alimony was deductible to the payer and taxable to the payee. Well, it's no longer taxable or tax deductible. So now you have a situation where there's a lot less motivation for someone to pay alimony. So a lot of people were rushing to get divorced by the end of 2018. So things like that can really spark sort of a rush to the courthouse, and things like a recession or a bad economy can slow down the rate of divorce.
Well, Liz, we plan to keep a long and happy relationship with you. Liz Weston, columnist for NerdWallet and author of the books Your Credit Score, the fifth edition, and Deal With Your Debt, out of Los Angeles. Coming up tomorrow on Technology Thursday, we'll have some more talk about things that are important to you at this time. And still to come, gauging the impact of the new minimum wage law in Illinois.
Buy, sell, listen.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The minimum wage in Illinois will be rising while an increasing number of employees are doing their jobs from the privacy of their own home. Now let's cover both of these workplace issues with Rick Cobb, the Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. So, Rick, let's talk first about the minimum wage in Illinois. It doesn't necessarily affect businesses equally because, for example, in Chicago, the minimum wage had already been quite a bit higher. And in other parts of the state, the minimum wage is quite a bit lower from where it's going to end up being by the time the state plan goes into effect.
Sure, that's true. And there's lots of ways to slice this. There are a lot of factors that impact an economy, a local economy, or the Chicago's economy. But the reality is that many of the people that leave the smaller communities, certainly in the farmlands and periphery, are going in part because of the opportunity to do work and to get paid better. So the minimum wage is something that is universal across an entire economic environment, whether it's a small town or a major city. You're raising the floor. The real risk may be for those that are on a very low margin commodity kind of environment with lots of competition. But other than that, it's a bit of a non-issue.
So while some might say that in areas where the minimum wage is lower, it is a bit of a disadvantage for them to perhaps see it go up so much. In other cases, it may actually make them more competitive with these other places that already have a higher minimum wage.
Well, it's hard to say. We're trying to look forward in something, but when you have the smaller communities in the periphery of Illinois, away from the major cities, you know, there's a lot of factors that are weighing in. Certainly, the ability to afford a lifestyle of any kind is a part of that. You know, the lower income families, and this is what we're talking about with $15 an hour, they spend 65% or more of their money on necessities. So it's not like the money is going off into something frivolous. It's actually basically sort of a survival environment. And the number of people in low-income families who have two adults working is significantly higher than average as well. So it can't do anything but help the bottom end of the pyramid.
And let's talk about telecommuting. Apparently that's becoming more and more common.
Yeah, it's almost for me a no-brainer for most organizations in that there's very little in opposition of allowing those that can to telecommute. And so we know that the studies that have been done indicate 13 to 15% increased productivity by the average employee who does telecommute. They certainly have a better lifestyle in many ways. I mean, the distractions are certainly the refrigerator and the TV, perhaps the bed. But outside of that, they don't have to commute. They don't have dry cleaning bills. They can start work right away as opposed to spending an hour on the train. They don't get caught up in the water cooler talk and gossip, provided they keep their TV off. There's so many benefits to people working from home. The downside is two things they've looked at. One of them is loneliness. There are people who just cannot be by themselves and need peer group and need interaction. That's an issue. And the other one is that some work is collaborative in nature. So your advertising team or your marketing team probably can't go off and work by themselves and come up with great ideas together when they're not together.
Bob, Rick, thanks so much for joining us. Really interesting topic there. Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. And you can find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at WBBMNewsRadio.com and radio.com app.
Let's get a live look at the markets at Bloomberg with Elisa Parenti. This report sponsored by the CME Group.
Jim, the Dow is now higher by 54 points or 0.2%. NASDAQ gaining 4, S&P up 6. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by more than 1%. And we've got gains for crude oil futures advancing 1.2% to $57 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.